If you're counting, and I know you're counting, that's four straight losses for the Tennessee Titans following a near miss 17-14 defeat against the Los Angeles Chargers on Sunday, a game where the defense looked a lot like the defense again. The offense looked a lot like the offense of old as well, particularly in the second half for the most part. A familiar injury issue for quarterback Ryan Tannehill, and so on and so on and so on it goes with this team. The AFC South race continues to get tighter as the remaining games on the schedule grow shorter. So we will take our weekly dive into these issues and more in the Believe in Titans podcast. I am David Beauclair of AllTitansAtSI.com, joined as always by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, David?
Doing good. And
Good.
John Glennon of AllTitansAtSI.com. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hope the same for you guys.
Doing great. Doing great as the holiday weekend approaches here. But before we get into all this, let me take a moment to remind you that BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. You can find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting to props and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, boys. Four losses in a row, one game up on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's get right to it. Denard Walker, are the Titans going to hang on and win this division?
After Sunday's performance defensively, yes. Offensively, no. They're going to need some playmakers, especially in the perimeter game. Again, that was a theme coming into this game, is who on the outside is going to make some plays. Unfortunately, who made some plays other than Chig and Austin Hooper? Nick Westbrook-Ikhine had no catches. Robert Woods had a couple catches. We saw Chris Conley again. He made a contribution, but again, until you get some production from the perimeter, I don't think this team is going to go far. I think they might miss the playoffs this year, to be honest with you.
So the defense is not going to be enough to get them through here down the stretch.
It didn't work Sunday.
No, it didn't. I mean,
I
the defense played great, and
he played great.
they gave up the one big play at the wrong time, right? The big catch to Mike Williams on that last drive gets the Chargers into field goal position, and they get the game winner there at the end. John Glennon, I'll ask you the same question. Will the Titans hold on and win this division?
I think I would have answered that question very differently, perhaps a week or 2 weeks ago. That's when we could look at the old playoff predictor and the New York Times playoff forecast or whatever you want to call it. Before last week's game, 86% chance the Titans would make the playoffs. But with that home loss to Jacksonville, so much has really changed. And if you're just charting, obviously the way these two teams are going too, obviously Titans have lost four in a row and the Jaguars are hot. 4-2 in their last six, 3-1 in their last four. Trevor Lawrence, I think, has thrown for 300 in three of those four games. They're clearly moving in the right direction. Another thing that's in the Jaguars' favor, they're a relatively healthy team, one of the more healthy teams in the league at this point. We all know the Titans are not. So you look at the remaining schedule. I see if the Titans can hang on and win this one at home against the Texans, I still don't think they can beat the Cowboys. I don't think they have the firepower to beat the Cowboys. So that leaves them 8-8. I think the Jaguars are going to win the next two road games at the Jets, who are starting Zach Wilson, and at Houston, which is Houston. So I think it's going to come down to that finale. Both teams 8-8, the winner take all. And honestly, right now, I'd give an edge to the Jaguars. So, I guess if I'm saying that, I say odds are this very moment, I see the Jags as more likely to make the playoffs than I do the Titans. Hard as that is to even say, that to me looks like the facts right now.
It's interesting when you think about a four game losing streak, and we all understand how it's happened, why it's happened, whatever. But you look at the fact that six of the other seven division leaders right now, the first place teams, I'm talking about Buffalo, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Philadelphia, Minnesota, and San Francisco, all have four losses or fewer for the season. I mean, four of those six have three losses or less, and then you've got San Francisco and Cincinnati with four losses apiece, and even the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a first place team with a worse record than the Titans at 6-8. Their worst stretch is three losses in a row, and I mean they've lost. They haven't strung together wins here in quite a while, and they actually don't control their own fate. The Carolina Panthers do in that division, but four losses and to still be in first place is a remarkable achievement in and of itself right there. But of all things, I'm going to be the voice of optimism here. I think Jacksonville has, it's a fairly young team. It's a team that had a lot of new players brought in through free agency this year, and I think that this stretch they're on right now, this has all been kind of fun and games, right? They had nothing to lose. All of a sudden, the Jaguars have something to lose, and it's a different challenge when you're playing with the burden of expectation and possibility and whatnot. And I have a hard time seeing them continue this win streak and put together these next two wins to set up the showdown in week 18 against the Titans. And I also think, the Titans are, I mean, now if the Titans don't win Saturday against the Texans, then I'll lose all faith in them. But you feel like in Nashville, after a couple of heartbreaking losses for the Texans, this is a game that the Titans should win, restore a little order to their locker room, and gain some confidence again, and just kind of calm the waters here. Of course, we'll see about that. It's not going to be it potentially won't be the same Titans team that we have seen most of the season. John, you alluded to the injury issues, and we should point out that the first injury report of the week is out. Ryan Tannehill, I think, is a surprise to no one, did not practice with an ankle injury. But the real news here to me is the entire offensive line is on the injury report, led by Ben Jones, who has a concussion again. Keep in mind, Jones missed two games earlier in the year with a concussion. A recurrence is obviously really bad news and creates serious doubt as to whether he'll be able to play. Right guard Nate Davis has an ankle injury. He was listed as a non-participant if they'd had a regular practice. Right tackle Nicholas Petit-Frere and left guard Aaron Brewer were both listed as limited participants. Dennis Daly, the much maligned Dennis Daly at left tackle, was a non-participant, but it was non-injury related, it said. And then, you add to that Dylan Raiden, who rotated in with Daly Sunday at Los Angeles. He would have been a non-participant with a knee injury too. So even if they were moving in the direction of Dylan Raiden as their left tackle, that seems unlikely. Denard, if this offensive line is in shambles, how much harder does that make things? Let's keep in mind, Derrick Henry's rushed for over 200 yards four games in a row against the Houston Texans. Is there any chance he could make it five without Ben Jones and maybe one or two other starters up there?
We'll see Sunday because, David, let me say this is look at Houston's last two games. They've lost in the last two games by a combined score of 10 points. They gave Dallas everything. Dallas had the same mindset playing Houston that they were supposed to go in Go down to Houston, go down I-45, beat this team up, get back to Dallas and party. Unfortunately, Houston didn't get the memo. It took Dallas everything that they had. They had to muster up every little play that they had to get out of Houston and say, wow, we escaped one. Because Houston had that game, it was 23-27. Not to mention Sunday, they lost to Kansas City 30 to 20, 24 to 30. Lovie Smith has this team going, even though the record is not a, it doesn't reflect that. He has this team going in the right direction, David, because you know what's changing in Houston is what's changing in Jacksonville. That's the mindset. It's all about the mindset. Remember, there's no disparity in this league when it comes to talent, and Jacksonville is proving that. So what's going to happen is if you're right now, if you're Tennessee, your back is against the wall when this team comes to town because nearly half of your team, like you just said, with the injury report, it wasn't like the offensive line played that great Sunday. If you look at this, just look at the offense. Just take a look at the offense for a second and look at the third quarter. That was abysmal. Okay. And they only scored, what, 14 points the entire game. The first series of the third quarter typically tells you how you're going to finish up the game. David, they had a punt, an interception, which was a turnover by Nasir Adley. Again, punt again, punt. And then they took a sack by Chris Rump the second off of Dennis Daly in a 39. And that right there, when you talk about the little things, let's take a look at the fifth series. It's 7-7 at this point. When they took that sack, instead of let's say Randy is less at 40, right? A 40-yard field goal, which he's
Right.
automatic, he's 5 for 7. They ended up having to kick a 51-yarder, which is 0 for 1 this season. That could have been the difference in this game Sunday. Think about it. In the fourth quarter, Tennessee could have been up, what, 10-7? Or excuse me, what was it be?
Yeah, that
Right.
would have been
That's right.
ten.
Yeah,
Yeah, they
10
would
to
have only
7
been
at that
seven there, yeah.
point. So basically what would happen was they're going to win the game instead of trying to tie it up, if my math serves me correctly, but my mindset. But again, we would talk about the little things, the sack Sunday. That's not getting any better. And it seems like it's a trickle-down effect. And if they don't clean this up, and you already got a line, like you said, David, that's hurting, Houston is reading that injury report. You don't think Lovie Smith is looking at his defensive lineman and saying, listen, we can take advantage of this group. We can win right here at the line of scrimmage. The only thing we have to do is put this team, let's make these guys one-dimensional. And how you do that? Hey, we're going to stop Derek and make the players on the perimeter, Nick Westbrook, Ikhine. We're going to make Robert Woods. We're going to make Chris Conley. We're going to make Racey McMath beat us. And if that's the case, then Houston might go into Nashville again like they did last year and pull one out.
Okay, but John Glennon, let's say this. The Texans have tried to stop Derrick Henry before and have been unsuccessful at it. What can they do differently? What can they bring to this game to make them think, okay, this is going to be different, other than maybe they're going against a whole different group of blockers up there?
Yeah, I think that's the key. One key is that they're going up against an extremely depleted offensive line this time around. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, the line that the Titans planned to start this week would be listed as depleted in the first place. I mean, you're looking at Daly, who is really a third string left tackle, because I think Jamarco Jones would have been playing there, had he remained healthy at all. And you look at all the way across the line, you're looking at backups or guys who weren't expected to be starting in the first place, and now you might be down who knows how many more. It's never a good sign, like on today when we see the Titans. Who do they add to the practice squad? Was two offensive linemen. That's kind of a giveaway that things are in kind of a bit of a crisis stage there. Daniel Monier, at least we've heard of, played a little bit with the Titans, had some experience, can play center if necessary, although he has some snapping problems, always an issue for a center. And Bo Benshawl, who I can't say I've ever heard before. He was the other practice squad pickup today. When you're looking at those guys, I don't think the Texans have to have a revolutionary defensive attack to stop Derrick Henry. So, that and you look at the fact that we know that Derrick Henry went through a 4 or 5 game stretch where he was being held to 40, 50, 60 yards. And I think there's a lot of tape, put up in that regard of effective ways that were used to stop Derrick Henry. So a little bit of learning from the Texans and a whole lot of depleted Titans offensive line, I have a feeling could make life more difficult for Derrick Henry than we usually see him against the Texans.
Yeah, Bo Benshaw was an All-American actually at Wisconsin, but
Well, all
has
right then.
had has had has gained no traction in the NFL to this point. This could be his big break if he gets thrust into action. But the issue too with keep in mind that the two games Ben Jones missed, Aaron Brewer shifted from left guard to center, and Dylan Raiden stepped in at left guard. Well, as we've noted, Aaron Brewer is hurting, might not be able to make that move. Dylan Raiden is hurting, likely won't be able to step in. I mean, the domino effect here is potentially catastrophic for this group right now. And I can't recall, and I've been covering this team a long time, I can't recall anything similar to that. And then you take that and think, in a best case scenario, Ryan Tannehill on a bum ankle finds a way to get back out on the field, and he's a sitting duck behind an offensive line that's not used to communicating with each other and playing in particular spots. Potentially one or two guys in there who were just signed off the street this week. So I mean, I guess that raises the question, Denard Walker, even if he can play, should Ryan Tannehill play quarterback this week?
They got no choice. Do you feel like you can win with Malik going into Houston with an already depleted line? This is Lovie Smith right now is the defensive coordinator for Houston. You don't think he's sitting there saying, listen, they got a quarterback. He's hurting. He's playing with a bum ankle. You got an offensive line right now that's been decimated by injuries. He's looking and saying, listen, fellas, we have a chance to go into Nashville once again, and we can get this game. I promise you, when Houston shows up, Tennessee's going to get their best effort because they got beat earlier in the year, so they're trying to atone for that loss as well. And it's going to be hard with all of the injuries. Defensively, this is a unit that can play with anybody in the league when they're on par. We saw that Sunday. They did a great job in bottling up Justin Herbert, who's one of the top quarterbacks in the league. How many touchdown passes did he have Sunday? Zero.
Zero.
And that was what was so alarming about this game. And I was like, you know what? Is going into this game, my mindset was Tennessee has the 31st pass. They're 31st in the passing game. Los Angeles is weird saying that name, Los Angeles. I want to say San Diego so bad. Los Angeles coming to this game, they're third in passing in the league. So I said, you know what? Their strength is Tennessee's weakness. And when I looked at the game, I'm like, no, Tennessee end up dominating that unit until what, the fourth quarter. They made some plays. They did a great job in bottling up their receivers. So you know this secondary, along if they can get some more production from the linebacker core, they're solid right there. But offensively, that scares me. I don't know if they have the firepower in these next three games to get through. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. This was exactly the kind of game that the Titans have won a bunch this year, and now all of a sudden they didn't win that game, and that has to set off alarm bells, and has to have everyone scratching their heads a little bit. But say this, John Glennon, when the Titans played the Texans the first time around, Malik Willis was the quarterback in that game. That was the first of two that Ryan Tannehill missed the first time he injured his ankle. Is there value in Malik Willis not only having played a couple games in the NFL, but played against this particular team, and maybe he comes in with a little more confidence based on that?
I think there are reasons to believe that we would see a better Malik Willis this time around than in his first two starts. Number one, fortunately for the Titans, the Texans happen to be one of the two teams that he has started against before. Went 6 for 10 in that game, wound up being the winning quarterback. So, did well enough for himself. Maybe more so than that, this is the first game that, well, I should hedge this. I was going to say that he will have Treylon Burks available to him. We don't know that for sure, but Treylon Burks would have been a full participant in practice today, which is Tuesday, which is certainly a step in the direction for him potentially coming back. So he could have Treylon Burks available, which he did not have against Houston, Kansas City last time. Back the last time that Malik Willis started, Chigo Conquo was not much a part of this offense at all. They were just really starting to find a way to get him more involved. And you look what Chigo Conquo has done the last 4 weeks. I think 17 catches, 200 yards, and a touchdown. He's a much more of a weapon now for the Titans than he was when Malik Willis was starting before. So I think, those are two pluses for Malik Willis. We have heard Mike Vrabel talk, at least a couple times this week about how Malik Willis's preparation for his kind of cameo in last week's game was very good. He was a better quarterback then. We heard Roger McCreary talk about how what a good job Malik Willis has been doing running the scout team. Another plus there. The downside. The reason where you wonder, oh boy, is Malik Willis going to be able to handle this? Is again what we have talked about so often, just that offensive line situation. That's not going to be probably much help to a rookie quarterback who's probably one biggest drawback so far is that he takes a lot of time holding the ball sometimes before he makes his decisions. That's probably kind of the Achilles heel so far for rookie Malik Willis. And that's the last thing you can get away with when an offensive line is so depleted. Those guys are going to be coming after him in a hurry.
But at least, one of Willis's strengths is his mobility, his
Yes.
escapability and whatnot. And it could be a case where the coaches tell him, look, you have one, maybe two reads, and then get out of there and go. This is where they have worked very hard to sort of keep him in the pocket, keep his eyes downfield, teach him all that stuff throughout the preseason and whatnot. And this might be the one where they tell him, look, forget all that stuff for a
Just
week.
go.
Just keep yourself alive. And while we're talking about quarterbacks, I think we should note too that these two near misses Houston has had the last 2 weeks, they've done it with two quarterbacks. Davis Mills and Jeff Driskel have been rotating on some to some degree. I'm not sure I've read up on it enough at this point to know exactly who's going in the game when and why. But I know what we're going to hear from the Titans defense this week. It's we're preparing for the Texans offense. We're not preparing for a specific quarterback. But Denard Walker, how much will these guys need to know and look to be aware of which quarterback is in the game at a particular time?
Well, they bring, I guess, a different dimension as well. They're playing the two. Of course, when you look at Jeff Driskel, I've watched him when he was at Florida. Big time player. He's got an average arm at best. He's good. He was up for the Heisman for a while. I know that he was, or at least in consideration, his senior year. Driskel's tough. Davis Mills is who you should prepare for. I think he gives them a better chance at winning this game. We know what he's capable of doing when you give him some time in the pocket. I thought Tennessee did a great job in that first game this season. They just got after Davis Mills and just made life miserable for him all day long. So if you're Tennessee, I think you prepare for Davis Mills as he's going to be the starter. But I don't think Jeff Driskel really presents a problem to this team. If you're Tennessee this week, you just want to make sure that defensively you're ready to eliminate the run game, make this team one dimensional in the pass game. If the secondary can play like they played Sunday, it's going to be hard to score some points on this unit.
And Houston's run game will be without rookie running back Dameon Pierce, who's hurt, I believe out for the year. John Glenn and Mike Vrabel said Monday, he said again Tuesday, there's a lot of good veterans on this Houston team, a lot of guys who know how to win, have won games other places. They just haven't done it here. Is that a message you think that will get through? Are the Titans Is there any fear that the Titans don't take this team seriously enough, given the Texans' record, and which is the worst in the NFL right now?
Well, I think if the Titans had about a three-game lead in the division right now, or three or four-game lead in the division, that message might not get through. But I don't think the Titans have to worry about overlooking anybody right about now. When the Jacksonville Jaguars came here into Nashville and kind of punched the Titans in the mouth last time around, and the Titans were used to handling the Jaguars so easily. And when the Titans know the circumstances right now of the playoff chase, and the fact that, there is still the possibility that it doesn't have to come down to that winner take all on that finale too. If the Titans can and the Jaguars, if there's a magic number of three over the next 2 weeks, then in the Titans' favor, then that winner take all scenario goes out the window. So I think there's plenty of incentive for the Titans not to overlook the Texans. And as Denard referenced earlier too, when you look at the Texans' last couple games, going down to the wire, probably should have beat the Cowboys. Then they take the Chiefs into overtime too. Those are two high quality teams. So those will open the eyes, I think, of the Titans, and combined with the sense of urgency they have to have right now, I don't see them overlooking Houston.
And also opening everyone's eyes or catching attentions right now, I think, is the weather forecast for Sunday. John, give us your put on your Jim Cantore hat and give us the rundown of what we should be expecting from a meteorological standpoint.
Yeah, so just check the latest weather balloon, David. I've got some fresh data coming in here. This has the possibility, very real possibility, of being the coldest game in the history of coldest home game in franchise history for this team. Not only Nashville going to Houston as well. The current record holder there is in 2017. It was a 23 degree game. I believe it was 16 wind chill against Jacksonville, and the Titans came through and won that game 15-10. And it was an important, very, very important game too, because they clinched a playoff spot with that win, the first time they'd gone to the playoffs in the last 9 years. So what's the forecast right now for Saturday? Again, 23 degrees. Looks like a wind chill, maybe about 5 to 10 degrees less than that, because you got winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. So pretty brutal. This is a Titans team that, if you look on the broad picture, has not done especially well in cold weather games over the years. This is a long, long time. Denard, no offense.
Oh, not taking none.
But you have to be encouraged. This year, I mean, they've already had kind of I guess a strange phrase, but a warm-up game for this sort of situation. They went up to Green Bay. I think the kickoff temperature up there was 26 or 27. It snowed for part of the day, and we know how good Green Bay has been over the years in cold weather, and they handed it to Green Bay one pretty handily up there. So that has to be an encouraging sign going into this game.
Yeah, days like that are obviously miserable for fans, unless you live in Buffalo. They seem to enjoy that sort of thing. But Denard, the players have heated benches. They've got high-tech clothing and everything else nowadays. Is it that miserable for the players? What's the worst part about playing in those kinds of conditions?
It's like the time zone. You get used to it. It doesn't faze players. It didn't faze me. The coldest game I've ever played in wasn't Cleveland game we were discussing earlier before we went on air. It was the game when we played Philly. It got cold. It got so cold that I
Oh, that was
remember,
2000
yeah,
also. Yeah.
2000 also. It started out, it was perfect. It was fine. And it was a later game, later on in the day. I think it's about 2, 3, maybe 4 o'clock. The weather was just fine. For some reason, it started dropping. It dropped to the point where most of us little guys, we ran in there a little earlier and got some long johns on, so that weather would hit our behinds. But I don't think there's going to be an issue. Plus, when you're playing on the field, you don't really feel the weather. It's not like something that affects you. Guys, Vaseline, they put Vaseline all over them. It's kind of like a We kind of use it as a, it's like a barrier, believe it or not. And it has a way of not allowing that cold to hit you as much. Now, the only miserable part about cold weather, again, if you're a fan, David, other than that, it's not a, I don't think it's anything that's going to affect the game.
You know, that game in Philly, that was in the old Veterans Stadium, which had a sort of smaller press area than you would get nowadays. And actually the television crew, they had to have a camera position at the end of the writer's area in the press box. So the window was open and the camera was shooting out. And I was actually in one of the last seats close to that camera position. And to your point, Denard, the temperature dropped like crazy.
Yes.
And I had nowhere to run to go get long johns or anything that day. I ended up, by the time I went to bed that night, I was sick as a dog. I got so cold during the course of that game. I couldn't get out of there fast enough to get back to the hotel and start writing. And literally by the time I went to bed, I was sick. That was a miserable, miserable day.
Yeah. And David, I know you are a Philly guy. Now, is it true about Veterans Stadium? They have a jail cell.
They did.
Yeah.
That was added in the later years. Just, you know, folks get a, in fact, I think the new stadiums might actually have that too,
So why do they call Philly the city of brotherly love if you have all of that?
That was William Penn, the founder of Pennsylvania and the city of Philadelphia. That was what he dubbed it. He was a Quaker. Believed in kindness to all, and you know, Philadelphia has gotten a bad rap over. Let me just say, I'm curious though. Back to the cold. It is. Do you have to be really careful with your footwear? And is the ground harder? Does that make you change? Guys, maybe change what they would normally wear in terms of cleats on the Nissan Stadium turf.
Yeah, it depends on the elements. I mean, if it's raining, they got studs. That's what your equipment manager. That's their job, is to make sure they come out. Before we play, they get there early, 3 or 4 hours before the game starts, and check the footing. So that's not a non-issue as well. I mean, believe me, there's all kinds of spikes that they have just in case the weather's that bad. And guys, if they feel like you need a 3-stud, a 5-stud, David, they have all of that for you.
Two things I was going to mention as may or may not end up being factors in the cold. Also, one. You know, we referenced Randy Bullock earlier. You know, one of the things in real cold games, obviously the air pressure of a football will actually go down. And so you're not going to get the kind of distance that you usually do on your kicks. And, you know, Randy Bullock's strong suit anyway is not necessarily a cannon of a leg. You know, he's more of an accuracy guy at this point in his career. So if you take, you know, 3-4 yards off that range too, you know, that's going to impact the game. And I also wonder, you know, Malik Willis likely to do a lot of, read option type things, you know, a lot of situations where he's putting the ball in the running back's belly, yanking it out, that kind of thing. So you wonder when guys' hands get cold, you know, both for the quarterback and, you know, sometimes for the running back too, you wonder if mesh point might be a situation. We're going to see that more often than we would, you know, if it was a Ryan Tannehill at quarterback, again, if this pans out. So that might be a situation to watch as well.
Well, and watch we all will. A Christmas Eve day game, which will either put folks in a really, well, I don't know if they'll be in a really good mood, but certainly a better mood on Christmas Day, or it'll be a blue Christmas in the wrong sort of way for Titans fans, depending on what happens Saturday. But as always, we will be back next week to look at that and all other developments with this team. And until then, Denard Walker, happy holidays to you and yours.
Happy holidays. And to John, I just wanted to say on the play by Roger McCreary, did you think that his hand size or the length of his arms has something to do with the play of the year? I don't know.
I was going to mention that. I mean, if we touched on that topic today, I was going to say, Denard, didn't you like the length of those arms there that he was able to make that play? Very impressive. So good point by
Real
you.
quickly, we're running out of time here, but Denard, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good, how smart a play was that by
It's
Roger?
a 10. It's a 10. And thank God for the size of his arms.
John Glennon, happy holidays to you and yours.
Okay, to you guys as well.
All right. And again, I am David Beauclair. This is the Believe in Titans podcast brought to you by Bet Online. We wish all of you out there the best for this holiday season. We'll talk to you next week.